Listen, I've never had any problem expressing my opinions, but what we're doing here is bigger than that. These are conversations that need to be had in an unfiltered way. Drag racing's all I've ever done. It's all I care to do. I respect the history, I appreciate how far we've come, but I want more for this sport, and I'll fight for it. It's uncut, it's unfiltered, this is the show of shows. The biggest names in drag racing. No holds barred. This is the Great American Motorsport. Drag racing. Prove me wrong, I'll wait. Hey gang, Wes Buck here, Drag Illustrated Magazine, checking in. It is Wednesday, June, 15th? Is that right? Somebody shake their head in the green room. Yep. I think that's correct. Wednesday, June 15th. Thank you guys so much for joining us right here on the Drag Illustrated YouTube channel and Drag Illustrated 14th. Facebook page. As always, is it the 14th, T?
Yeah.
Today is the 14th, is it right? Let me look. Let me check my phone. Hold on. JT's in my...
Confirm.
Thank you very much for the correction there, T, in the ear, the old producer stepping up to the plate. I appreciate it a lot. Anyways, thank you guys for joining us so much. Remember to click like, click share, click subscribe if you're following along on YouTube. The old channel count, you know, the subscriber count's going up, so we appreciate you guys very much. Lots going on in the world of drag racing this week, fresh off the NHRA in Bristol and Epping, the New England Nationals getting wrapped up at Thunder Valley Dragway. Great. Probably the most excitement I've seen around an NHRA event since the season opening Gator Nationals. I hate to say that it felt like we kind of got into, it was just the normal state of affairs really quickly. There was all this energy and excitement to start the season, sell out crowds. And I think what ends up happening is it just, there's so many events stacked up one after another that it does kind of start to run together. You hate to say that, but it does. But the rain out in Epping really kind of added some new energy or a renewed enthusiasm at this kind of early point in the schedule. I mean, we're running up on the middle of the year somehow. It's incredible. It's going to be July before we know it. And it's funny how this little bit of a rain out, it actually gave this event in Bristol a renewed energy or a new sense, in my opinion, of enthusiasm. I saw people tweeting about it, posting on social about how busy and how crazy of a weekend it was. And man, by all accounts, it delivered. Great to see Erica Enders back in the winner's circle. Justin Ashley doubles up in Top Fuel. Just a fantastic weekend. Justin Bond continuing to do his deal in NHRA Pro Modified competition. Drag racing going on all over the world in a big, big way. But we've got a very special guest today, and I've got something that's been kind of weighing on me since way early in the season that I'd like to talk to this gentleman about. Before we get any further along, let me introduce our co-host today, the one, the only, the people's champ, Scott Palmer, my boys, JT Hudson, Mike Carpenter in the house. What's going on, guys? Everybody good?
Yeah.
Holy shit, this is a lot of red line.
That's a lot of red line.
Hey, it took me a while to do this. Nobody appreciates Mark and Redline more than Scott Palmer Racing. You talk about it's a game changer for our entire team, because if you look around this shop where I'm sitting in, there's a lot of stuff, and we use a lot of Redline. So having their help means a lot to our team, 100%. And I see all y'all's deals about invoicing, so... Man, I made sure I got a quart of oil back.
That was
here.
Basically a script. That was a script read right there.
That was a script read.
Yeah,
we actually talked to Mark a couple of weeks ago for an interview with a new show that we're getting ready to launch, Scott. And one of the things that I talked to him about that I think sometimes people kind of don't recognize is the consumables that are involved in nitro racing. I mean, what, 8-9 gallons of oil junk after warm up, right?
Yeah, it's about 14 quarts every time you start it.
I think JT was thinking more Coors Light when you're talking about consumables.
Yeah. So oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Coors Light is definitely a consumable in our pits.
Damn right.
But having some help on oil can make a big, big difference for a team. So shout out to our buddy Mark Beatty and the gang at Redline. They do a lot for the sport of drag racing, man. It's almost hard to keep up. I mean, we talk about how many things are going on in this sport. It's hard to keep up with how many teams Mark and Redline are helping or supporting in some way, shape, or form. It's a cool thing to see the brand so prominent in drag racing again.
Yeah. Well, the good part about Mark and Redline Oil is they don't just help the top contenders. They help some of the guys who need the help, like us. We are one of them. But, I mean, there's a lot of them. I follow who they help, and it's nice to see them spread that around to some teams who will be at the top at some point in their life, but they need this help right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what do you make, Scott? I mean, as somebody who's dove into NHRA, I remember at one point in time, like of the highest priorities for Scott Palmer was to go be a touring pro. Go say you did it, go to all the races, chase the NHRA dream. We've seen you do that. We've seen you dabble in the door car stuff, the Nitro Studebaker. We've seen you even serving as an event promoter with, which is just right around the corner, the Stampede of Speed down here in Texas, which I know we're going to be working together on. What do you make of kind of the new, it does seem like we've got some fresh faces in Top Fuel, some new competitive teams. Do you think that there's some opportunity in the Nitro world right now? You got Chris Graves putting on all these Funny Car Chaos and Nitro Chaos events. It seems like A Fuel and Top Alcohol Dragster in general is doing really well. Is there some organic growth potential in the fuel ranks right now? What do you think?
I hope there is, but unfortunately, I think it's such a money sport that I think that Funny Car Chaos should be like a. I think they should be scouting some of these people running these other series, like even the small tire series that we're going to talk about later. I know, but I mean, even that you're not, our sport is not looking for drivers. They're not looking for the future of that. It takes so much money to run a fuel car that they're looking for money. And that's unfortunately what the problem is in Top Fuel, in my opinion, which I said before, I'm right, because money ruins everything. I mean, money ruins it, because it gives all the great, there's some great drivers out there in the sportsman ranks, small tire, you know, top dragster, top sportsman, super comp, best drivers are there. They'll never get the chance to get in a Top Fuel car unless they have money. And that's unfortunate. Used to, you know, Don Perdomo put people in cars, you know, Ron Capps, all these guys that were in cars back then, it was because there were outstanding drivers, Larry Dixon, all these guys. Now, you know, unless you own your own team, it's really difficult to get in a car because you're a great driver.
We've talked about that a lot on here.
And I think that hurts.
Working your way up.
You know? Yeah, change the sport.
We have to change the sport. I mean, and that's the challenge, is because whenever I think about that exact scenario that you're describing with Don Perdomo putting, you know, these high caliber drivers in cars, there was money. He was able to do that because the economy that existed in motorsports at the time supported it. He was able to field a Copenhagen car, right? And put a driver of his choice in it. And it wasn't, like you said, directly connected to his own checkbook. There was so I think that it's interesting, because I kind of struggle to wrap my head around it, to be totally honest, because I see teams making it work, you know, and finding a way to do it, finding a way to get money, because it seems like there are some, I mean, look at the new interest we've seen in team owners. Joe Maynard, I mean, my goodness, what an impact that guy's had in a very short amount of time. The gang at Skag, right? Doing big things, sponsoring all these different cars, bringing Tim Wilkerson into the fold this year, as well as Erica Enders, and that is really, they see opportunity in drag racing. What do you think the issue is, Scott? Like, do we have to just get some fresh eyes involved? Is it a new energy, just a new direction? Because it does seem like there's some opportunity. There are people that are making the B2B part of our sport work, the hospitality component, putting those things to work. I don't know what is missing, because it feels like we have so many of the pieces in place, but there's something missing. We're seeing live television, right? All these sellout crowds, but because we've got to find a way to make this problem go away. Like, it's going to hinder our sport forever if we don't find a way to get the most talented, capable drivers in competitive cars.
And personalities. We need the personalities that are out there that are not getting used because of this deal. But there's a few things I think that are hurting. If you look around, live TV is not the answer. It's not the answer to NHRA drag racing. If it was, NPK would be live. They pack the place. Everybody knows that Kai Kelly won the last race, but they will still tune in to watch that race. So I think we're missing a boat there. We're too focused on live TV, and people are not following NHRA drag racing because it's live TV. I think we spend too much time doing that. They see the show. If they see the show, then it's over. And if you miss the show, they don't get to see the show. So you can't get it on Monday night. You know, every Monday night you can watch No Prep Kings or Fastest in America or whatever. It's not so much that it's live for NHRA. That's, I think we spend too much time making that too important.
And the live broadcast, the live window, in the schedule comes out for NHRA, we look and see how many live broadcasts they have. And those are like the holy grail, or the way we look at it. Right. But that's a real interesting point that it really, in this day and age of the internet and the MPK being the ultimate example of building characters elsewhere and then having a taped show that is produced and builds upon that is more the direction you see things going. So
my opinion on it, and I think there's a lot of different ways, I'm going to try to a couple of metaphors or a couple of analogies. Like, one that comes to mind is that you fall in love with a song or an artist, right? Because you hear it on the radio a lot, right? And you fall in love with that song, or you fall in love with the person who sings it. And then what happens? You want to go see them perform it live. We're missing in drag racing that radio repeat consistency. We're expecting, you know, NHRA specifically, in my opinion, they're putting, as you're saying, Scott, so much onus on the live broadcast, but they're not doing the other things that make the live broadcast significant. Like, we have to go build these stars and turn these people into characters and these into larger than life celebrities so that it's meaningful to see them do their job live. Does it make sense? Like, it's shoulder programming. What No Prep Kings has done is they've turned these racers into stars, into big personalities, into these lovable or hateable, for that matter, characters.
Might
that
be people more have started to be hateable.
Yeah, it might be more valuable to be hateable, but they've done that. We've, through consistency, through the radio replay that is Monday nights every week, and then the replays, and then airing the show again, they've created an environment where it's a big deal to go see Kai Kelly race live. It's a big deal to go see Ryan Martin compete live. I feel the NHRA is missing that component. Expecting it to do it all.
It's checking the boxes, basically. You know, because you're giving the race fans the race. Right. You know, that you're putting on at a track live for them, but then you control the story because you can edit it, right? So that you're controlling the story and getting these personalities out there when it airs on TV. So you don't have to cram every single run in to the live broadcast. You know, so I mean, I don't know. It ticks all the boxes. So if you want to watch the drama, you can tune into the show, catch all the drama. You're going to be kept up on.
There's a great example that's going on again with the UFC is the Ultimate Fighter. They have a reality show, right? That Conor McGregor is one of the coaches on, and they're going to use that show for the next 10 weeks to build up these individual characters so that at the end they can have a live event. They can have a UFC fight and sell tickets to it. But they're going to use those 8-10 weeks prior to build those stars and to introduce people to these characters. And I feel like we're missing that component in drag racing. Because when I go to an NHRA race, like, I can't help but find myself a little frustrated because there's a lot of great stories in the pits of an NHRA race. Tons of them. I mean, great people that are hilarious, that are fun to be around, that have these that are wild and crazy, and not just what, but some of them are just like really good people, wholesome, hardworking. It's not just all craziness. I mean, there's plenty of craziness, but there's just a lot of great stories in the pits of a drag race. A lot of stories of success and triumph over all sorts of tragedy.
Do you guys find yourself doing that when you're watching it with somebody that's maybe not so much into it, and somebody's on there and they're interviewing and you're like, oh, that guy,
this guy's a great guy.
Yeah. And then, you know, after you've done it a few times, you're like, I just need to shut up.
But it's true, right? Because I'll be watching like an NHRA broadcast with somebody who's maybe not familiar with the sport. And I immediately find myself going, oh, this dude is awesome. He owns a car dealership, came from nothing. You know what I mean? Like, I will tell their story while he's on TV thanking his sponsors.
And then about three or four times, you're like, I really sound like a douchebag. Like, I'm just name dropping,
Hey, I do that too. Hey, he was in our fits on Thursday. So yeah. We have deals. I think it's gotten so corporate now that I don't think NHRA can tell the backstory. because there's so much corporate stuff that they have to watch. I think it's so corporate now that they can't come to our pits on Thursday night. It's Evel Knievel Thursday in our pits. He drank Wild Turkey. Our tradition is Thursday night, if you're standing in our pits, you either take a shot of Wild Turkey or you get out of our pits.
Friday, I've got a picture. How it is. Friday I've got a picture of me and Mike Friday. In your pits.
Saturday is Shotgun Saturday. I mean, we have all these traditions that crew guys come over, other racers come over, but they can't really do that in their pits. They can do it in mine because we have the best. We have the best backers on our team in the world because we can do whatever we want. But they can't show that because that's probably not a good example. I don't think it's a bad example. I think that would make the story even better because we're not the only pits who do cool stuff in their pits after hours.
But and have fun. I mean, that's the thing that I think we all get lost is one thing is we forget who we are. I've had this conversation a lot. Like, this is a sport that was built on the back of outlaws and rebels, guys with their shirt sleeves rolled up, a pack of smokes in their pocket. I mean, this is a outlaws and badasses. And I think that we have tried to like put a suit on over top of our leather jacket. And it's that's tough.
It's a
tough thing to do. Right. But I mean, that's kind of how I feel when I'm at an NHRA race is that it's like, and it's no knock. It's the highest level of our sport. It's the pros. But it does feel like maybe somewhere along the way we have lost touch with our roots a little bit because, as you mentioned in the green room before we started the show, Scott, and this is I was thinking about it before we started filming is I wanted to how do we there are a couple of things that points that I wanted to get across. But it's like the hottest thing in drag racing right now. Like, don't get me wrong. Top Fuel. Really competitive. Great to see a resurgence in Funny Car. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we very rarely had full fields. It's fairly common occurrence now. Pro Stock doing well, but the hottest thing happening in drag racing right now is small tire no prep racing. That's the hottest thing in drag racing right now. There's no doubt in my mind.
100%, that's the hottest thing in our nation right now. Probably the world. I don't know what the world does other than that. I don't follow that, but the small tire revolution going on right now is huge in our country, and we're all missing the boat. You know, we're going to do something about that. We're going to try to do something. And, you know, we've been talking about it, but we need to get together and make something happen and put these guys on the map some more. I mean, I call them the underground small tire group because these guys are underground racers that have bigger followings than NHRA Top Fuel racers.
No question.
They have bigger followings on social media than any of us do. And it's like we all have tunnel vision. And if we're a certain class of racers are in a certain class. We run Top Fuel, Funny Car, Pro Stock. It's like we have tunnel vision and we're not looking outside. And those guys running this small tire deal, that ain't no joke. These are badasses. These guys are tough. And it's, I would love to do it, but it's, you know, I don't want to be the guy riding their shirt tails. I want to do something to promote these guys because I think they could come up and run a nitro car someday. Maybe not. They may hate nitro. But hell, 90% of them have never seen a nitro car because they're out there running small tire with the stands packed, and you can't even walk through the place. It's awesome.
I think right now, if I had this
picture real quick here, we stopped by Scott's.
Got it. JT's got it. We're totally in the midst of telling a story right now, talking about something.
Whatever JT says. Oh, there we go. Whatever JT says.
Look at this, man.
I've got a picture to show you.
That was at Scott's pits about what 2 a.m. something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. We were having warm milk and cookies too.
Hey man, I'm all for some fresh baked cookies. I'll be there for that. I'm a cookie guy. But I think the three hottest things, if I had to identify what I think the hottest stuff in drag racing is right now, I would say number one without question is small tire no prep. It's interesting to me that it is so hot because really when people think about radial tires or small tire racing, a lot of times what they think about is crazy track prep. Track, you know, spending all day dragging and spraying. That's not what happens at these big time small tire races right now. The ones that are really bringing in a lot of high level competition, and it's a really, really even playing field because the track's junk for everybody. The track's garbage for everybody. I mean, I actually saw a video of the surface that these guys are racing on at one particular event last weekend. And I'm going, most Like every NHRA racer I know wouldn't even go to this place.
And that's such a forgotten thing about drag racing and a forgotten skill is to be able to navigate these, you know, unprepped. Basically, if you race in the 80s, you were racing on what we would call an unprepped surface
100%.
These days. And just navigating that and the fact that everybody has to go down the same track, regardless of how shitty or how awesome it is.
And half of these guys are standing on the back bumper, leaving the starting line. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got these. It's the coolest thing to see because I like seeing guys. For one, it's neat to see a guy be able to be competitive at like a popular buzzworthy race with like a conventional headed big block Chevy and a cast aluminum intake, a single carburetor and a plate system, or, you know, a small block for that matter with a couple of nitrous systems stacked on it. I mean, it's nice to see people able to race at a high level at stuff that's getting talked about, that's getting YouTube views, that's getting, you know, ink on Drag Illustrated, et cetera, without having to have a $500,000 race car. I mean, a lot of the guys that are showing up at these deals have cars that they've got $25,000, $30,000 in. That's an attainable thing. And it's to be able to go race a car like that and be like somebody, that's awesome to me. That, like, I mean, our buddy Jimmy Dale, Tom Gunner, he has a really attainable car. It's not the latest, greatest. It's not a $500,000 deal. It's not a twin turbo Lamborghini or some super exotic supercar that's had all this. It's not that. It's something that somebody who mowed yards all summer, worked their ass off, you know what I mean, and maybe had another job could save up and have. Very attainable. And that is something that I think as a community that we lose sight of sometimes is that, you know, I mean, even Cletus, like, it's awesome to see all that he's created. But a lot of that stuff is high end. You know what I mean? It's exotic builds and big power and stuff that is kind of beyond the scope of what a lot of regular folks that work 8 to 5 and have families and other responsibilities can afford. So to see these dudes making names for themselves and selling merch and becoming somebody in the drag racing scene and doing it with a freaking streetcar Mustang or a four-door sedan. I mean, that's pretty badass in my opinion.
And they're doing it without TV.
Yeah.
There is no TV. Yeah. There's no TV coverage at all. There's live feeds or whatever, which is the new thing where I think we're all focused too much on our TV coverage, unless you're a TV show like No Prep Kings. Obviously, that's the number one. That's the number one game in town as far as popularity, but it's because there's a set day. You can watch it Monday night. You can watch last week's, then you watch this week's, and you're caught up, and you never lose sight of your favorite driver, which is awesome. But these guys like Jimmy Dale and all these small tire guys, they're doing it on YouTube and social media by hardcore underground followings. I mean, this is like a cult. It really is, man.
I mean,
it's actually bigger than most NHRA drag racers can imagine.
No doubt.
Because they don't follow it.
And that's something that drives me crazy, because I was going to like bust off. Like, I do think the three hottest things in drag racing right now are small tire, no prep, drag and drive, and pro mod. I mean, I think pro modified, I'm laying it back. I mean, I can make an argument that it's the hottest thing in town because of the World Series of Pro Mod. I think we've brought a new energy to it. Right. But I think it stays relevant. Pro mod is just a unique beast in that it's so big and there's so many places to race those cars that you don't maybe see as many of those white hot moments that some of these other events, because everybody goes to one event, right? Like War in the Woods, for example, looks the way it looks because all the hitters go to one place and everybody's talking about it. And everybody brings their audience. Everybody brings their fan base. And it's similar to what happens with the World Series of Pro Mod, but they just do it several times a year because there are no series. There are no points to follow. You're just looking for the next big race. I mean, Outlaw Armageddon down in your neck of the woods, it'll be the same way. All the hitters come out to be at that one race, where Pro Mod, it's a different animal, right? You have all these guys that kind of operate in their neighborhoods or their communities. They run NMCA, they run PDRA, they run NHRA. But then once a year, they come to the World Series of Pro Mod, and you kind of get that same kind.
Bring everybody together. And I think everyone that spoke about World Series of Pro Mod said, hey, this is what makes this race different is all these hitters from all these different classes that we don't, or these different sanctioning bodies that we don't get to compete against, quarter mile, eighth mile, bring them all together. So,
and Pro Mod has never went up or down. It's maintained throughout the years. Once I think so too. Came onto the scene with Vandergriff and Scotty Cannon and, you know, all these guys that started this, it has been the class in door car racing to me. And I'm a pro stock fan. I love pro stock, you know, because of Bob Glidden and all the guys back then. And, you know, everybody follows the pro stock story this year because of Erica. I mean, she's brought it back to the map and kicking ass again now. So, but I mean, Pro Mod has never went up or down. It seems like it's maintained. And then last year when you did the World Series of Pro Mod, it really took a spike, because where else would you see all these Pro Mod guys in one spot? It was wild. It was like a who's who. I rode through the pits just wanting to get autographs, which was crazy. You know, cause yeah. There was some badasses there. Everybody there was a badass except me. You
know? Hey man, I think all certified badasses. But I think it's interesting because there is and maybe this is a little nugget that we should throw out, is that I do think this whole small tire contingent, they're going to have to resist the urge to like grow beyond what's sustainable, right? Because these are those magic in a bottle moments that people start getting excited about. And then all of a sudden somebody's going to go, oh, we should do a 6-race series.
Right.
Right. Or we should do a touring deal. And this is when we can't help ourselves.
Purse.
Right. And it's going to hurt it. Right. Because what we need is all these things happening. Right. These smaller events that happen.
That are spur of the moment.
That are spur a little less, a little rougher around the edges, less promotion, less all of those things. But that's where the magic is. And I think that, I mean, it will evolve. I'm sure it will, and it'll continue. But right now, it is as hot as anything in the sport, in my opinion. What do you make of the drag and drive movement, man? I mean, it feels you're like a do-it-yourselfer. Does that pique your interest at all?
It does. I mean, I love too. It. And Alex Taylor lives, you know, basically right down the road. I mean, probably an hour from me. So I follow them a lot because they're local. So it's the next, you know,
if you were taken out to go on a drag and drive, who would you, from your crew, would you bring with you? Rick?
Rick. Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Cause I mean, he can do anything, right? Between the two of you, if you guys had to build the car on the side of the road, you'd be.
Yeah. If you want to break down on the side of the road, you want us with you. I promise you that. we can do things on the side of the road that are amazing. I mean, we've broke down so much over the years, you know, with the Top Fuel deal, that if you're going to break down, you want us somewhere in range. For
sure. I believe it, man. Well, so let's talk a little bit about one of the things that I want to talk to you about specifically. And we saw this early in the year, and I thought it was probably, I still point to it as, I would say, one of the biggest happenings so far of 2023. We're six months in. Eric Dillard making those Hail Mary passes to start the season at the Snowbird Outlaw, or excuse me, the U.S. Street Nationals down at Bradenton, Florida, Bradenton Motorsports Park, the house that Vic Alvarez built. He went, I believe, what, Mike, 278 and change in a 2,650-pound, not far from legal Pro Mod car. Incredible performance. I believe the second fastest quarter mile speed of all time in a door car. We were talking before we started recording today, Scott. Is that 300 mile per hour mark doable for a door car? Do you see? It feels like there's some energy and maybe some desire behind being the one who gets that deal done. Do you think that's a possibility?
100%. It's going to happen. It's not. I mean. And of course, I think we're going to do it for sure, because I wouldn't have built this car if I didn't think we could have done it. But we've got sidetracked running Top Fuel Week. About the same time we built the Studebaker, we got a deal with Tommy Thompson to run the full NHRA series. So we kind of got sidetracked. Well, now I haven't went to Bristol. I'm not going to Norwalk. We're testing this Chevelle and this Studebaker, and they're going to go down the track, and I'm going to make that happen. But as far as 300, there's a handful of people right now. Mark Mickey, Eric Dillard, for sure. I mean, look at how fast Shane T and Tido and the Zimmerman gang, look how fast those guys are going to the eighth mile. If you think a turbo car can't go 300, you're out of your mind. It can happen.
What do you think? So I would like to just kind of dive into some of this. Go ahead.
Talking about the eighth mile. What's your car? What's it been to the eighth mile?
It's been 241 to the eighth mile off the computer with the, and it's pretty, you know, it's pretty.
And see, that's a lot more than these turbo guys. We've seen what 220s, mid 220s out of those guys. What, I guess in the back half, how much closer are you to that 300 than you think those guys are, just based on obviously power, but the way you're running the car? It seems like your car is just slipping. Well, it's just getting started at eighth mile.
Well, my problem has been is I'm comparing everything to top fuel races. So I'm trying to go quick early. And I'm looking at numbers last week. And Dave Richards runs 302 miles an hour in the 1,000 foot and run 950 or 60 foot. And I've been 912 with the Studebaker, which I know there's been pro mods go faster. But Aaron Brooks and Bobby LeGon, all these guys have got together and kind of giving me a little pep talk. We could go 300 and run one flat in 60 feet. The problem is the motor is 18 inches further forward than a fuel funny car. So I'm comparing things to nitro cars. So we're going to go out and try to run 950, 60 foot or slower even, and just get the thing rolling, because that's when it ran. It's run 236 and 241. It needs to do 240, mid 240s consistently, and I'll send it to the finish line and take my chances.
Yeah, because these other combos, they've got to make an all-out run. They've got to make a quick run, you know, at every incremental to get it going. So, yeah, it's two different ways to go about it, but it sure as hell will be interesting to see how it happens.
But these things will put a hole out and just, you know, I'll everything will be in my lap. You know, the blower and the whole motor will be sitting in my lap at the finish line if I'm not careful, where a turbo car is going to do it a little more realistically. This thing is not the most responsible thing to sit in and stab the gas on, I can tell you that. When it starts, you know you're doing something that's probably not right.
Well, if you just see the starting procedure, yeah, it's a little worrisome, just the procedure itself and what it takes to get that thing going. You're like, yeah, this is not something you want to do repeatedly. But
I think it's as hard. I mean, there's nothing that would be more, and I don't want to make it sound like any of this stuff's easy. It's not. But I don't know that you can go about attempting a 300 mile per hour quarter mile pass any more difficult than you're doing it, right? I mean, I would say that the, like you said, it's a much more like stable operation, like a twin turbo Hemi in Mark Mickey's car,
yeah,
or one of these pro charge Hemis. I mean, you're going about it in the most difficult possible way. Is that, you've talked about this on the show before,
most
that
dangerous way?
Yeah,
I think it's the way I put it.
It's hard to slow the thing down, though, right?
It's,
I mean,
hard. It's hard. It has a 104 gallon fuel pump on it, and everybody tells me you need to put a smaller pump on it and run it softer. I don't know how to do that. I've only ran a top fuel car. I haven't ran a nostalgia car. I want to say that it's a legit top fuel car. It has everything that dragster has on it. There's not one thing that's not on it. But that also hurts me, because if I would probably back it down, I do believe it would still probably go 300 and probably do it a little bit safer and maybe easier. But that ain't how I'm going to do it. I'm either going to do it my way or I'm not going to do it, and it's going to be scrap metal at the end, you know, which is very possible.
Is that the last really attainable milestone in drag racing, guys? I mean, if we think about it, because this could be a great little clip, is 300 miles per hour the last? It's amongst the last significant.
Well, you've got 300 in the
eighth, mile.
For you know, they got the bounty out on that now in top fuel and funny car. But as far as door cars, you may be right. And it's something, if you think about like the Studebaker, you think about the other turbo cars we just mentioned, these cars are a little bit sketchy at 250 with the tiny wings they've got on them and how slick they've made these cars. And anyone will tell you, you know, driving from the eighth mile to the quarter mile, it takes a lot of finesse and it can get
courage
dicey in a hurry. So how much does that change when you start getting close to 300, and what kind of innovations, what kind of, you know, new things will we see just to, you know, try to reach that mark? That's really in door slammer racing. That's the thing that I think about the most.
It's going to be hard, because I've got a wing on there that I just put on there you know, just kind of, hey, this looks like the money car ring. Right. And I rolled metal at my buddy's shop, Mark Mollowater's shop. I rolled metal up and make it look, hey, man, this looks good.
Hasn't been in a wind tunnel.
I have no clue what it's really going to do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's going to, it's probably going to just fly off of it at speed. I don't really know what it's going to do.
Or it might be too much wing or too little wing.
Yeah, it might be too much.
Yeah, it's like Evel Knievel, you know, before he jumped the Grand Canyon. Well, this is either going to go really good or really bad. It's probably not going to be a gray area, though. There's going to be one or the other. And that's really a possibility.
I'd like to, I want to pursue this. I think that this 300 miles an hour deal could be, if you think back, especially our sport, drag racing just has such a love affair with the numbers, the metrics. You know, we have argued that at times that it's bad, right? I mean, you don't, sometimes I think we get so wrapped up in the numbers that we kind of diminish how special all of this is. I mean, like a PDRA race, all the cars are running, like you're almost become desensitized to how hard it is to run 360s in the eighth mile in a fully suspended door car because they make it look easy, right? So I do think sometimes our focus on the numbers has been bad. But if you look back historically, I don't know that there's ever been a more seismic happening in our sport than Kenny Bernstein going 300 miles per hour in Gainesville.
Yeah, never.
So could that moment be replicated to some extent if it were, you know, I don't know. I think there's a big opportunity there for somebody to kind of plant their flag. I mean, if I'm one of these, if I'm Scott Palmer, if I'm some of these teams, the Eric Dillards, the Mark Mickeys, some of the people that I know kind of have this on their radar, I don't know, man. I mean, we got several cars encroaching on that upper. And now, granted, 278 to 300, it might as well be a mile. Right? I mean, that it's a long way, but it does seem like the pathway is there right now.
It's definitely possible. I mean, I talked to Shane T a lot. We're good friends, and you know, I think you turn those loose, take the weight off, put a wing on them, they're going to be really close. And I told somebody, they said, hey, what if a turbo car does that? I said, you know how much money it'll save me in my life if they do it first? Then I could just go back to normal, you know, whatever that is. But you know, I'm a little bit obsessed with this. I mean, I bought two new Crispin rear ends from Tasca's team, from Aaron Brooks. I come home, I put one of them in the Studebaker. I don't put them in the two top fuel cars. I put one in the Studebaker. I mean, everything that we do, like we get new stuff. The Studebaker has a brand new motor, brand new set of heads, new Darren Mayer supercharger. It has.
So what you're saying is, it's like, I think people probably think that you put the Studebaker together with leftovers or the stuff that. And that's not the case, is the point you're trying to make.
And honestly, I should have used the stage 6 heads on it. But no, I have to have stage 7s because I wanted to. It's my pride and joy. It's the roughest rat trap of a car you'll ever see. You need a tetanus shot just to walk around it. But I love that car. There's no way that I would ever get rid of that car. It may get rid of itself someday before I build it, but that's just a chance I'm willing
Let's
to
take. Let's hope not. Do you think, is there a pathway, do you think, where that car or that combination can become like repeatable? Like maybe not running it the way that you are, but do you think, I mean, we actually saw at Nitro Chaos, I don't know all the details on that black 69 Camaro that was hanging the big old header flames out of it at Eddyville Raceway Park, but I think there's clearly a desire for those cars. I mean, I think a guy could probably match race those cars fairly successfully at this point. Do you agree?
Yeah, that's Andy Fangman and his 69 Camaro, and that car is basically a nostalgia setup in that car. That car goes up and down the racetrack with header flames. That's what match racing is about. That's what you need to do. When I get done with all the psycho stuff that I'm trying to do with mine, that's what it needs to do. And the Chevelle of J.R. Sandlin's that we were running, we're testing them this week, we want it to go fast. We think it'll run, you know, we'll say in the threes, but we want that thing to go up and down the racetrack with header flames for the show. Mine is a little bit overkill. And once that's settled, then we'll probably back it off or try to figure out a way for just to do match races with it. And with Marty Chance has one, Shane Ferris and those guys, they're building one. They've got a Corvette. They're putting a nitro motor in. So there's a few of them happening. So there is definitely a possibility of having a match race series. As far as them being a class somewhere, no.
I think sometimes
like safety, right? SFI certification and safety and I mean, and that's another thing to talk about the 300. Like, what will the slap on the wrist look like when one of these cars goes 300?
It's going to be heavy.
Yeah.
I can tell you because, Joey Gorman and all the NHRA tech guys, they've worked with me on the Studebaker. I was the black sheep for a long time for it. You know, really kind of in trouble over it, over the Studebaker, which, not being a smartass, but I don't care. It's not like I'm going to stop running it. It doesn't matter what the consequences are. I'm going to do it anyway. But they've made a deal where I can run an 8th mile exhibition. It and the Chevelle can both run exhibition 8th mile. And when I go to run 300, that's just going to be a consequence I have to take, which I will. I'll take it.
How bad could it be? I mean, I guess they could take your license. That's probably, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Think of the money that will save me.
Right. I mean, I don't know, man. I just think it's a very interesting conversation, and it's fun to think about because drag. This is the. We need more shit like this. You know what I mean? Just that we've lost that part of it. The showmanship, the
Evel Knievel aspect, like you said, Scott.
Evel Knievel, I'm telling you, that's where it's at. It's somebody has to come out and do something to spark some more interest. And this Studebaker is crazy. This car's never made a full run that anyone's even really seen. It's went 300 or 400 feet a few times. Everybody's seen it. Okay, that's great. I sell so many T-shirts of this car that I won't even tell you the amount on air because it's insane. That just shows you that people like crazy shit. They want something crazy. They're tired. You know how many Top Fuel shirts I sell? Who cares about the Top Fuel car? They don't ask me about that. They ask me, hey, you got any Studebaker shirts? I have a room full of Top Fuel Dragster shirts. But I
it proves our point like all the time is that the on track like success in many ways is secondary to like the reason you're doing it. I talk about this all the time. It's not what you do, it's why you do it. That's what makes the difference in life. Like I really think that it is. And I think Scott, when people see you, the people's champ, they see a brother in arms, they see someone fighting the same battle as them, and they just want to see you fight that fight. It doesn't matter if you win 15 world championships or none of that matters. It's that it's why you do it. You're one of them. You're a guy chasing the dream, the rebel, the badass, the outlaw, all the words we mentioned earlier. You're that guy. So it's easy for people to get behind you and cheer you on. I really think that that's the difference in my opinion.
Most of them know that I didn't come from money. I painted cars in my garage my whole life. God, it's crazy how all this happened. It happened through doing all the crazy shit I've done, starting from street racing and burning a car to the ground street racing when I moved to Missouri from Oklahoma, and, you know, crashing the car at Ozark. And, you know, you can either sit around and pout about crashing your car, or you can get up and
get some Jim Beam or some Wild Turkey get the next one going.
Everything, and then you're good. Get back on it.
What's been, whatever you think about doing this, all that you have done, Scott, and this crazy experience that this has all been, doing it with your son, doing it with your friends, like the coolest thing about you, and this is something that I tell people a lot that always means something to me. I really appreciate people that are consistent. You don't have to ever wonder how Scott Palmer is going to treat you. Like it doesn't matter late at night, early in the morning, in the middle of a thrash. You're a great guy. I'm just curious, when you reflect on all this, Scott, like you got to be proud to be doing what you're doing with the people you're doing it with. Like you didn't have to like join a new group or like say goodbye to all the homies. You're all still doing it together.
Nope. I went to Ozark Raceway Friday night to hang out. Ricky got a top dragster. So
yeah,
I saw. Test it. It's the first time he's really raced. So we went out there and it was like, nobody really cared that I'm a Top Fuel racer. I'm back at Ozark. We're out there. I'm on the starting line. It's normal. I've had to give up nothing to go Top Fuel racing. It don't get no better than that. Most guys don't do that. You forget where you come from. And I, man, my mom, she stamped that in my brain as a kid, never forget where you come from. She's talking about being poor, you know, but that's true. You know, I tell everyone, we're all 30 days away from being under. Everybody, no matter how big you think you are, you better keep hustling. You're 30 days away from going under. Keep working.
It's true.
In the green room earlier, you mentioned you've got a ton of support from some companies and some backers that they don't really care what you do. They're supporting Scott Palmer in whatever he decides to do next. It's not, you've got to have it on the top fuel card. You got to make this number of races. Yeah. You got to cover this geographic area. It's you is who they're backing.
Yeah. We had someone at Chicago come up, Dan Davies come up, and you know, he's hung out with big teams, you know, and he come up and actually sent one of his workers out with a check. I'm like, well, what's that all about? He's a friend of Nick Trask. He's bought a couple of Trask, you know, turbo Harleys from him. And anyway, he said, listen, I just want to be part of the whatever you got going on. I said, well, I don't even have a schedule of what races I'm going to. He said, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be part of this deal. I want to be part of the group. And I said, the only way to be part of this group is to be a friend, because we don't have sponsors. And that's the truth. Everybody on the car, I say it all the time, I don't have a sponsor name on the car. They're all friends, including Redline, because Mark's a friend. It's not, yep. He's not doing this for the betterment of the company. Yeah, he might get a little bit of exposure for it. He's doing it because we're doing crazy stuff out there, and we're just doing it our way.
Speaking of Redline, hey, we've got a clip of the Studebaker we're going to play, and then we'll jump in and pay some bills and switch gears here. Roll it, T.
You made it quite a ways there.
That was it. Didn't you film that from the
JT filmed that.
Yeah, JT filmed that while we were doing the show down there live last year.
I did, yeah.
JT filmed that. That was when Aaron and them all talked me into taking all the weight off the primary livers. I went from 130 grams to 40. And if you see that, look at all this clutch dust blow out of that thing. When I stepped on the gas, it was like, uh-oh, this is not going to go anywhere. And then it was like having my Nitrous Express system on from the old days. Every time a clutch flow would open, it would just set you back in the seat and set you back and set you back. And that was their lesson to me, to slow that thing down early. Because by the end, even though it looked slow early, by the end of that run, it was trucking along pretty stout down there. It wasn't too bad. And it had a hole out on the left side, so you could see it going to the left. So that run right there taught me a lot. And then the runs since then, testing, have been better. So
how hard is it to keep the motor happy with the clutch slipping like that?
That's been my question all along.
It's harder. It's harder because it's not loaded. So it's definitely harder. That's where a smaller fuel pump would probably help me right now, but a smaller fuel pump will not help me go 300. A bigger fuel pump is going to help me when I go to 300. And that's,
I love it.
That's the whole concept. I'm going to find a way to make that work. It's going to work for sure if I just focus and get some runs on it.
One day Scott's just going to, he's just going to hit that magic combination and go like 335. He's going to be shooting to go 300. He's just
whole body. It looked like a dune buggy at the finish line. The body's going to be gone.
You know? So let me ask you this. Like, you were mentioning Aaron Brooks and some of the other people. Does this community, like, is there some evil mad scientists out there that get a kick out of the opportunity? Because that's one thing that I think sometimes the fan base kind of draws. There's less of that. Like, there's not room for innovation. There's not room for because the rules are really strict and we operate within these set parameters. Do some of these crew chiefs kind of get excited about the opportunity to go do what you're trying to do and something that's outside the bounds a little bit?
Some of them do. Bobby Lagana's told me, thought I was lost my mind for the last 5 years when I started doing this project, but he's finally realized that I'm hard headed and not going to stop doing it. So everybody's kind of helped me along on this whole project. Aaron Brooks, of course, we're all friends. John Stewart. But I tell you, when it really hit home, what I was doing about 5 years ago, I guess, when I first started the project, I went and ran it at Larry Jeffers' track, and it went 300 or 400 feet the first hit. And I saw Tommy D, who, you know, is kicking ass right now with Justin Ashley, and I love it. But I saw Tommy D at an Applebee's, and we're sitting around drinking, and he waved me over there and he said, sit down. And I sat down there and he said, hey, I'm just going to tell you, that Studebaker that you're messing with right now, that's some Don Garlic shit you're doing right there. That's cool as hell. And I was like, that's when I realized, oh, people are noticing. They think it's a big a deal as I do. I mean, some of them do. Now, some of them think I've lost my marbles and I've got screws loose, but that's okay. I mean, I think somebody's got to have the screws loose out there. Might as well be me.
Yeah, all those guys, they thought Garlitz had screws loose. They thought, you know, Grumpy did. They thought Scotty Cannon did. You name it. They think the No Prep Kings guys do. All the early movements of these classes that we now know and love and get refined and
if you walk through,
is that a word?
Yeah, and if you walk through Don Garlitz's museum, it is one screw loose idea after another. I mean, it's they've got a jet engine strapped in this one. They've got two motors in that one. They've got the motor sideways in this one.
Got a canopy. Wheels covered.
Every step of the way, it's another crazy ass idea. And again, we lose sight of that.
Have the Studebaker and Don Garlitz Museum sometime.
How badass would that be?
How badass would that be? I mean, I got a fire suit and a helmet in the Evel Knievel Museum. I mean, that's pretty badass. But
that is
Studebaker being in Don Garlitz. I mean, you know, not that that could happen, but I'm just saying that's for Tommy D to, and he doesn't even remember this conversation, I'm sure, but for Tommy D to corner me, because back when he said that, it's not like I was a front runner in Top Fuel. It's not like we hung out. I mean, I talked to him, but for him to corner me and wave me over and tell me that, I walked away from there going, holy shit, am I an idiot or what? You know, because why would he say that? Is it really that crazy? Because in my mind, it doesn't seem that crazy, but I think that's part of the reason it's cool.
That's why you're able to strap yourself in that thing.
That's right. And he's probably in a good mood too, because it's 2-for-1 drinks, you know. At Applebee's.
Oh, yeah.
Nights. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're right.
Applebee's. That's the only saving grace that place has.
It is like the only saving grace.
And it's open till 11.
Yes, and it's open late. Yes, it's open late. It's kind of like, I don't know, the bougie Waffle House. I mean, the food might be better at Waffle House.
The food is better.
But they serve booze at Applebee's. So that's the upside of that. Real quick, let me remind everybody that each and every episode of the West Buck Show is made possible by way of our friends at Stroud Safety. Stroud Safety is known for their top quality racing safety equipment, from drag chutes and seat belts to fire suits and blankets, all 100% made in America. Log on to StroudSafety.com and make sure you tell them we sent you. We've been all over the place here. Let's talk about one of the things that I think has been the hottest or one of the most talked about storylines that exist in the whole sport of drag racing this year has been Erica Enders in the Elite Motorsports camp, seeming slow start to the 2023 season. We saw Erica win over half the races in 2022 en route to her fifth world championship, an incredible performance last season, but it seemed there was something of a championship hangover headed into 2023. Rough start to the season, hardly a round win, operating outside of the top 10. I can't remember the last time it actually felt genuinely uncomfortable. Like, it felt odd, like this elephant in the room, not having Erica Enders in the winner's circle prior to now. This past weekend at the NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals in Bristol, she not only got the job done, but qualified number one. Really impressive performance. Scott, as someone who's done this for a long time, can you just talk about how important momentum is and how these things kind of compound when, I mean, drag racing, it's hero or zero, right? Can you kind of reflect or maybe share your sentiments on the rough start to the season? Because I think every racer has faced that at one point or another in their career.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The momentum is everything. I tell everyone, when you go out there and you win a round, that starts your momentum. You win one round, at the next race, you win another round. Before long, you've won four rounds. If you do that in one day, you want to race. I mean, and we've come really close a few times, but for Erica and them to have a little, you can call it a slump or whatever you want, but I would be really nervous if I was the rest of the pro stock guys, because they're back, and they came out swinging this weekend, and you know how that goes. They've got the momentum now, And whatever they were doing, they may have been testing something. They may have been doing whatever. But I guarantee you, Freeman and those guys are coming loaded for bear right now. And I would bet money that this is about to be a run of wins. I bet they're back for sure.
I agree. It's like they find ways to get a chip on their shoulder.
I was going to say the same thing, JT.
You know, it's crazy.
I'm from Oklahoma, so I got to cheer for them because I grew up in Oklahoma. My family's still there. So in Oklahoma, Freeman is their heroes down there. And I support it because, you know, they're Oklahoma. And Connor Wilson, he started with us. He lived here. Now he's on Erica's team. Got his first win.
Erica actually mentioned him in the interview.
You know, he's one of those kids. He looks like he's 12 still. His actual nickname is Noonie. So if anybody sees him, make sure they call him Noonie, not Connor. He'll really appreciate me saying that on the show too.
I think JT though, you make a really good point, and that's how it feels to me like the Elite Motorsports camp, they need that. So they had a dominating season last year. I mean, you can't really ask for more of a runaway victory.
They did that with a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah. Lost it all at the end of the season. We're in a razor tight battle going back and forth and end up falling short. And so they spent all of 2022 pissed off, right? I mean, we saw no more nice Erica. And I think headed into this season, they take a collective deep breath, got the job done, a fifth world championship. I believe Erica has cemented herself as the greatest female drag racer of all time, and she's going to be in the conversation for greatest drag racer of all time in the very near future if she's not already. And they needed something. So this slump, like you said, if that's what you want to call it, a little bit of a rough start to 2023, to me felt necessary. Because I don't know if there was going to be anything else that really got them up on the tire. Because if they're going out there, what more do they have to prove or accomplish? I mean, we've seen Pro Stock choose people up and spits them out left and right. That is a very, very difficult road to hoe. And to have the success that they've had, I mean, there are people that spent their entire lives trying to win a single Pro Stock race. And to have 45 of them, I think, 44 of them, to her credit, she's done all that she needs to do and then some. So, JT, I think you make a great point. It's that Michael Jordan-esque finding a way to take it personal.
Yep.
Right? Like, yeah. Yep.
And they had a great matchup on deck against Greg. And then Greg broke into burnout. They backed him off. And it was really interesting after the fact. I think they were talking to Rob Downing. And basically, he admitted that they over-revved the engine or something in the previous round and then knew that it was hurt, but were hoping that they could just go up there and get another round out of it. And it didn't happen. So that was an interesting situation. I was going to get your take on that, Scott and Wes, as far as, you know, what was the thought process? Why didn't they swing that motor? You know, was that one so much better that, that they didn't want to have to go to a backup? In the end, it cost us seeing, you know, arguably the two greatest Pro Stock racers of this generation squaring off again with a lot on the line. So it was a kind of a bummer, but also interesting as it unfolded.
Yeah, personally, go ahead, Scott.
I think the difference in those motors may have been, it could have been 5 horsepower and changing the motors or running that same motor, but 5 horsepower in Pro Stock is make it or break it. And when that elite car is running, you can't put your backup motor in there if you think it's weaker. You need to hope the other one hangs in there for another round and gets them out of there. And, you know, I can see why they did that and took the chance. But, you know, last weekend was just one of those weekends where they were not going to be denied. It just didn't look like anybody could stop them, even though there was people running close to them. You could just feel it in the air that she was back.
I felt much the same way. Like, it felt like a predetermined thing. Like, she turned the corner and you could sense it in her body language, in her demeanor, her tone, all the interviews. Every time I saw her on camera, you could sense that there was like that the switch had been flipped, so to speak. However, to your question, Mike, though, I do think this is a little bit of a thing that we're going to see. I couldn't help but feel early in the season some of the struggles that Elite Motorsports camp team was having was just kind of acclimating to the lay of the land. I mean, they're like running 7-8 cars. I think that that's one of the things that we tend to gloss over as fans, is that it's like, okay, they've got all these cars, they're getting quadruple the data of everybody else, but they've also got quadruple the work to do, quadruple the shit to go wrong. I mean, that's 6, 7, 8 trucks running up and down the highway, breaking down, and all the things that come with that. And KB, my point is, they're experiencing a little bit of that themselves now too, where we've got two teams that field almost the entire pro stock field. Do you think, Mike, that there's any chance that it was a, we've got to make a decision here, we got a lot of cars to take care of, or we've got, you know, a couple of cars in the hunt here? I mean, what's your, is that a possibility? Maybe not enough to go around, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And maybe we are in a new era. Maybe it's they're also under new ownership this year. So maybe that, the way that they're going about managing their finances, maybe that's different. But in the past, you would just, these teams, they're going to swing that motor, especially got Erica coming up. You know that they've got to have at least one more bullet in there that they're confident in, but maybe not. And like you said, they've got how many teams across KB now in Elite? We have what, 7 or 8, and that's more parts. Parts are hard to get. And so now you're spreading that across 7 or 8 cars. They probably are having to make some different decisions these days. It would definitely be interesting to get a little more intel on exactly how that went down.
Because there's got to be, I agree with you, like most of these teams are carrying more than enough engines, you know, especially at that level. When you're a KB, when you're an Elite Motorsports, it does seem odd that you'd knowingly hurt one.
You got to give it up to both of those teams. When you roll in, you see all those rigs and all those, everybody in the pits and all the whole staff and the golf carts and you know, and the food coming in and Cody cooking over there. I mean, wow. I mean, I couldn't even fathom trying to put all that together and keep track of everybody. You know, I lose half my friends. You know?
We've ran 2 top fuel cars at a few races, and I cannot even imagine what it takes for them. And I know a few of the kids, Logan and Travis and Connor, on those on Elite's teams, and the caliber of crew guys they have over on those teams is second to none. They're the best young crew guys I've probably ever seen, and they just stay calm and cool and roll into the next town. I mean, they're like traveling rock stars, all these kids are.
And they get them to move to Wynnewood. You know, a lot of these people, right? You know? And I've been there, and yeah, and there's not much there. There's not much there. No. Uh-uh.
There's nope. Not much there. It's amazing, but they have the talent cornered on crew guys.
Mm-hmm. To me, you got Joe Exotic across the street, dude.
You used to.
Yeah. I thought it was still functioning in some way, or no, they shut it down completely.
No, I think it's shut down.
It is. Hey, everybody drinks.
Richard's gonna buy it just to say he bought it.
Yeah. That crazy son of a bitch over there. We've got him on video. I think Blake shot down there. It is absolutely hilarious when he was taking Wes and Blake by there to show him. Oh, my God. And then one day they went and videoed it. Oh, my gosh.
I wish we would have gotten to see old boy make a solid run for presidency. I mean, on the heels, I think it would have been fun to watch post-Netflix show. You know what I mean? Because he's...
Yeah.
Homeboy's got a significant fan following over there, you know what I mean? And, you know, he thinks he'll never financially recover from a staff member losing an arm. I'd run for president, see how that works out on the books. I don't know. I think that'd be a fun one to watch unfold. Now, I really am glad, though, to kind of go back. It's going to be, I think, Scott, you may be right. If I'm any of the other guys in Pro Stock right now, you needed to really capitalize and enjoy this moment while they were down, because I don't think it lasts forever. And who knows, to your point, they may have been testing something. They may have been trying something and hiding, you know, kind of just saying, oh, we're struggling, but you know, maybe we'll see this play out in the heat of summer. We'll maybe see this play out a little differently later in the season. I'm glad to see you're back in the mix, because that's when pro stock is the most exciting. When we've got, you know, that red car needs to be in the winner's circle, because she's a legit star out here. I think that's something that they, maybe the class doesn't always recognize, that she's got a legit fan base. I mean, I really think her and Greg Anderson kind of stand alone, you know what I mean? As far as like super strong fan bases, and they've brought a lot of people with them and lifted them up along the way. And it's important to see that red car and blue car go into the finals.
Absolutely.
I hate we missed that.
They deserve it. Look at, I mean, you know, without Elite and what Freeman's done, Pro Stock could be gone. And you know, and Greg Anderson. Pro Stock would probably not be here. And Pro Stock's too good a class for it to go away.
Yeah, we talked about that when they got together to save the class, yeah. Basically.
So do you think something like that could be done in Top Fuel? I've often thought, like, why is there not an effort to, like, make sure some of these cars that don't make great showings, Scott, and I don't mean to – I'm not saying this in any sort of disparaging way, but we know that there's cars that show up and struggle. And I just wonder, is that something that needs to be talked about? Could someone not – could NHRA not put someone in place? Could Pro not put someone in place? Could there not be an effort made to help some of the lesser funded teams? Because it certainly doesn't hurt anybody. I mean, I understand you run the risk of helping somebody that's going to maybe beat you in first round. But I don't know. It just feels like it would be good for the sport.
Right now you have Bobby and Dom Lugano who honestly would give everything up to save the world and especially save the Top Fuel class. They help every little racer out there that's humanly possible for them to help. But I think if more people did that, then our sport would be better. But the problem is, it's such a competitive deal and such a corporate deal now that everybody's caught up in their own little world and they forget that without these little guys, they don't have a race. When you have, you know, 12 cars at a race, you know, that's not that cool. They need 16 cars. When I started 20 years ago in Top Fuel, there was a minimum of 25 every race. So we need to go back and evaluate the situation because I don't know what happened, but I know money. You can say money, but money's relevant then to now. It was just as hard for me to run then as it is now, to be real honest. I don't see the financial difference compared to the economy. It's kind of all went together, but for some reason there was 25 cars at every race. Why? I don't know the answer to that, but we need to find the answer and get them back. But part of it may have been because, you know, technology hadn't taken over. It was everybody using manual lean outs and, you know, pretty barbaric stuff to do it. And a little guy didn't have to buy a, you know, $12,000 fuel management system or something. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but
it's interesting because it seems like in Pro Mod kind of the other side of the coin is it's gotten a lot more technology, right? Traction control, torque converters, all these, there's been a lot of technology, driveline shock technology show up and it's made it more possible. It's right. Don't get me wrong. There's always going to be a different, but it's the word. Do you agree, Mike? Like it's gotten more, you can buy a store bought kind of setup and go be in the hunt. And it's interesting because to your point, it's not like it's gotten twice as expensive. It's always been expensive to race Top Fuel. And
I think it's more like a risk reward thing. And the fact that if something goes wrong, far few people are out there that I'm just going to go hop in this Top Fuel or this weekend. And nothing against Pro Stock and even Pro Mod, but it's like, you can kind of make that argument, you know, being a fly-in, bring your helmet and a fire suit type of driver in those classes. But it just takes a whole another level to do that in Top Fuel and Funny Car. I wonder, are these guys looking, are they running Pro Mod instead? Are they running no prep stuff to get that fix rather than looking to Top Fuel for that?
I don't know. I think a lot of, if you look around, a lot of the Top Fuel guys that are not showing up, they quit. And see, I don't know. I don't understand that. They either quit or just park all their stuff. They see it as a step down to go do something else. I don't. I want to run Pro Mod. I want to run the Studebaker. I want to run, I want a small tire car, but I'm not getting one. So don't
yeah. start. That kind of goes back to what we were talking about though, Scott, that you kind of need this stuff to feed in. You almost need that ladder, you know, so that the Pro Mod feeds into Pro Stock or Pro Stock feeds into Funny Car. Yeah. Funny Car feeds into Top Fuel. And without that ladder, yeah, like you're right. And you have guys quitting, but where's the replacements? You know, where's the guys coming, you know, to take that spot then?
You gotta have the cross pollination.
You do.
Can you see the red line, sir?
Another invoice.
That's the sound that goes off every time.
Yeah.
The red line logo.
Yeah, like a cha-ching. Okay. We need a cha-ching button. You know, like yeah. Or like slot machines hitting or something, you know. Ding, 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 ding.
Mark's gonna kill us.
No, I love it, man. It is really an interesting thing because you would think with all the new technology and parts are better than they've ever been, parts are more reliable than they've ever been. If you table like the COVID availability crisis or whatever, and things being hard to get, if you just, you would think that there'd be more successful fuel cars. But I'm like reminded of it every time I go to an NHRA race and you see like that whole contingent of the journeyman guys that are struggling the same way today that they were 10 years ago. It's like, man, it's too bad that there's not something in place to help those teams, you know, like some sort of committee or a group that's committed to like fostering the development of those teams, because we really badly need them. But what we've created right now, or what it looks like on the outside, I think to most people, is you, if you're going to go fuel racing, you pretty much need to be able to rent a ride with one of the top teams, or it's, or you're not going to be able to do it. You know,
we talked to Clay about getting the better parts, you know, yeah. And he said that he thought that that was really going to help his program. And then we watched him go out and get a win, and, you know, which I thought was outstanding. Just great to see Clay in the winner's circle.
It is.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that team, look at Rick Ware, he came on. So there's people out there who are interested in our sport and trying to grow it, but we just need more. I don't know what the answer is. A lot of the top fuel guys, the smaller teams, I'll just be real honest, a lot of them are pretty hard-headed. Some of them don't want help. They want to go their own direction. But the ones who do want help, I can assure you, you can see the ones out there that are running good. You can see Kyle Wurzel, Todd Payton's car. Look how good they ran last weekend.
Oh, yeah, man.
Of course, I mean, myself and Logano's, we're family. We've grown up, you know, we've done this for so long together. It's crazy. But you can see cars like that. These are all 370 cars now. All these cars. Our car runs 370s almost everywhere we go. It'll run a 370 on a dirt road. But we know our place out here. We know that if we get caught up trying to run 360s, we'll put ourselves out of business. So a lot of the teams don't listen or take the advice or help that's out there. But there needs to be more people than just Bobby and Dom Logano trying to save the world out here.
What's the difference, as someone who's not super, you know, tuned in to like racing a nitro car, what's the difference between a 375 or a 376 and a 368? I mean, what would you guys have to do differently to go up there trying to run that 368? Like, just so for the people that maybe are wondering what the difference is between like a Krista Baldwin, some of these teams that kind of, like you said, operate in a certain ET and speed range, what's the difference? What's the move up?
The main difference, honestly, is maintenance and crew. To run at that level, where our rods, we'll run our rods down to like, we'll say minus six. Capco, some of those guys, there's no way that extra run or two on those rods, they cannot do it. They run them harder. It's probably as small as a degree of timing on the timing curve, or a little bit more weight, a little bit more power to make it drive through the clutch. It's a small change, but it's a huge maintenance change and a huge personnel change. You got to remember, most of us guys, like, I don't have one single full-time guy at the shop. Me and my son work on it. There's not one single crew guy that goes on the road that is here at the shop right now. We all come down and work on it when we can. But we're at a huge disadvantage for that, and every small team is. So you either have to make that commitment to spend your money on all that, or spend your money on parts. And parts keep you in business, because if you don't have fresh parts, you're out of business. You can't even run 370s. I mean, you cannot run competitively unless you have some good parts in the trailer, and they're hard to get, and you got to take care of them the best you can.
I appreciate that, because I do think, yeah, like, I'm sitting here going, all right, is it a ton of ignition timing? Right. Is it a whole bunch more fuel? Are they way more aggressive clutch wise? Doesn't sound like it. It's just
not
whether
a lot
or not,
resources, yeah, human resources.
Not a lot. It's maintenance and parts as much as anything. And there's no doubt in my mind, especially when we were running the full season, making all those rounds, we ran 372 quite a few times, 329. There's no doubt we could run 360s, but you got to weigh your, are you here for a long time or want to be a hero? And I tell everyone, I have people say, I can't believe you don't want to win more than that. Oh, I want to win, but I also want to be here. Right. I also don't want to be here for one more year and gone. I don't like when I started the Top Fuel deal, I had to put in my mind, okay, realistically, I've watched, I sit back and watch, and there's been some big names go out of business because they cannot stomach not winning the races. I want to win too, don't get me wrong, and we've come really close, which makes it even worse. But I also don't want to put myself out of business. I want to be out here racing. I want to be doing things. So you kind of have to know your place out here.
And, it's a different mentality. That's more of like a match race.
Yeah. You may not be the toughest guy, but if you see your shot, we're going to take it. I mean, we're going to take it. Our shot will come, and it's come really close, but you got to kind of just lay low and tread water, and when your shot comes, take a big swing.
That's a different mentality to race that way and to almost be to ration yourself so that you're not just going all in and burning out before, you accomplish what you want or win a race or whatever. And that's a lost art. I feel like everything now is just record setting, knocking the scoreboards down, winning the races. But there's a whole host of guys. We used to race like that. My dad raced like that a lot. I'd get frustrated. I'd say, gosh, just tune this thing up, man. Shannon Jenkins is over there, right? Like swapping racks of pistons every round. And we still got the same stuff in it from the start of the season. I'm like, let's just pour to it and try to win this race. Nope. Because then we wouldn't be able to come back out the rest of the year. Something else may happen. And it was just a different thing. It's like, do you want to continue to race the rest of the year and wait for your opportunity? Or are you going to try to force the issue, which is kind of where everything has gone.
And the problem with nitro is you try to force something on nitro and it will definitely teach you a lesson. So you got to really tread water. And,
right.
And, you know, we just nobody out there expected us to even get to this level when we started. And to be able to run, I consider us a respectable running car that you probably are not excited to draw first round. Now, 10 years ago, absolutely. You wanted to draw me first round for sure. You wanted me first round. But now, either one of our cars, the one Jacob drives or the one I drive, they don't want us first round. I mean, we won at Chicago first round against Justin Ashley. Now, granted, they smoked the tires, but that's your opportunity. You got to
right,
swing.
Right, because you're going down the track. Yeah, they got to go down the track.
The whole situation.
The biggest part of being one of those top cars is like, all right, we know this thing hauls ass. We qualified number two or whatever. But how do we back it down enough to ensure that it goes down the track? Because we know that Palmer and his guys are. That's a
tough
deal.
And they also know that we can step up and run a 72. So they can't back it down too far because they never know, especially with us, because we're definitely a little bit of a loose cannon. We might go for it and we might not. We may just stroll it down through there. And Frank Manzo told me one time at Indy, I'd never qualified there. And it's Q5 and we're not in. And Manzo comes up to me in stage length. He's getting in his funny car. And he goes, all right, Palm, what are you going to do this time? You got to go up there and just ram it down their throat and just send it out the back door. I said, hell yeah, I am. It's Indy. He said, listen, that's what the rest of these guys are going to do. You take that run you just did. Now, we're in the lanes. I had to make some changes there. And he said, you run that thing just like you did there. He told me exactly. I mean, if you think Manzo don't know something about everything, he does. Because he told me what to change on the timing card first. And then
what'd he tell you? Be specific. I want to know the story.
He said, in retard, you take out one less degree, this car will run quicker than it's ever ran. And at the time, which was a 392 or something. And he said, it's going to take a 390 flat to get in this show. What are you trying to run? I said, an 80-something. I think a 90 is not going to be in. And he said, you take that thing, what you said, what'd you do, add more timing at the finish line? And I said, yeah, I did. I added another degree out the back door. He said, you take that back out and you stroll this thing out the back door. You'll get the show. It ran 390 with a zero and qualified.
No shit. That's awesome.
That's Frank Manzo. And that was from just being an observer. You know, that's just him walking in my pits every once in a while, looking aside. You know, and he's not a top fuel racer, but he is a racer. He could tell what I was thinking. And he could tell what it was going to take to get in the show. And I was definitely not qualified because it was.
How do you
more?
How do you? I run into this a lot because drag racing is this really unique thing, in that I was looking at racer stats the other day, and I don't say this to be at all like insensitive. I saw like Terry Haddock had something like the NHRA maintains driver stats on all their full-time drivers. And Terry Haddock has had something like 128 DNQs. And I thought about some of the drag racers that I've encountered in my life that came into our sport and like struggled for a season, right? And gave up, punted. I'm going bass fishing. I've seen guys, I mean, I'm talking about teams that are out competing right now who are ready to kick rocks and sell everything after three or four rough weekends in a row, right? And then you see someone like Terry Haddock, who's covered from head to toe in clutch dust with a smile on his face, dripping sweat, with nearly 130 DNQs to his credit, still out here chasing the dream, right? Thankful for the opportunity to do it. And I just, it is such a wild thing. Do you agree, Scott? Like how hard that is to be excited about. And I think it's like finding out that it's not just drag racing is one of those sports that I think there's more ways to find victory than in the winner's circle, right? I think that that's what's so special about this sport. I mean, I don't know, maybe everybody feels that way about what they do, but I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing. Have you ever thought about some of the guys that you've met, Scott, along the way that are still chasing a round win or still chasing one good run?
Oh yeah. There's so many of them out there, and we got lucky. And a few years ago when Tommy helped us and still does help us, but I mean, whenever he stepped in and we got to step up our program and we got a taste of what it was like, not, I just say it's good not to suck, but you know, we got a taste of that. So once you get a taste of that, then you look back and you say, wow, man, why would anyone stick with that struggle? We did the same thing as Terry Haddock did. Me, Jeff Deal, you know, even Laganas, we all struggled, but we were all happy to be there because that was our dream. You know, we wanted to be top fuel racers, and just to have a shitty one there was better than we ever thought we would even accomplish. So whenever we were there and we sucked, we just kept going. We didn't know we sucked because we thought we shouldn't be there anyway. So we just thought we were top fuel racing, and that's just how it was. But to have stuck with it this long, and even look at Terry. Terry's hauling ass right now. He's winning rounds. His car's running good. Nobody's pulling up beside him hoping they get him right now first round.
And I just think the whole situation, Mike, don't you think it's kind of crazy? I mean, it's like people... I guess I just don't see this in other places very often. I mean, I love to use the UFC example. I mean, you have a guy going a three or four fight skid. He's fucked. I mean, he's retired. You know what I'm saying? That guy's gone. You know, a dude doesn't qualify. I mean, how does that type of thing happen in golf, JT?
Oh yeah. I mean, they lose their tour card and I mean, most sports, you know, I think the difference here is, you know, money, of course.
Yeah. I was right? gonna say golf, you can just never win and still be a multimillionaire.
Yeah. Well, same with racing though. I mean, like as long as you have the money to keep going out there and taking swings at it, you know, or you have enough sponsorship to get you there, you can still go out there and try. Right. But, I guess that's probably the difference, you know, like say, if you say NASCAR or something and you are a hired driver for a team and you're not putting results in, well, F1, I mean, you're out. I mean, you know, you're out quick. So
it's just this rare, it's this weird thing where drag racing operates.
And it's almost specifically too in the Nitro ranks. You know, you're talking about Haddock, you're talking about all these guys that, and the fact that you really don't see the, you know, fly-in drivers like you do in Pro Stock and Pro Mod. It's guys that want to go their own way, fight the uphill fight, own their own stuff, create their own combination, have their own, you know, want everything their own, and are willing to sacrifice and fight that uphill battle to do it. You don't see that a lot.
No, and that's nowadays, if you don't have a big bank account or a big sponsor to bring with you, the only way you're going to get in the seat of a top fuel car is get your own. Scott Farley just did it. He bought Terry Totten's car. And he swung by here not too long ago and brought me a trailer load of his Pro Mod parts. And I traded him. I took a motor out of our top fuel trailer and I traded him out of his pro mod parts, and I said, "Man, are you sure you want to do this? Because you know, I mean, that motor right there, you got to say goodbye to that, because a pro mod motor will last a while. A top fuel motor is an expendable. You know, you have to be willing to sacrifice it. You cannot. I call it shrapnel's remorse. You can't have it in top fuel." You just got to roll another one out and then just be able to live with it and not count the decimal points, you know? You have to be able to do that. And Scott Farley's a pilot for UPS, so he's going to be a part-time guy and whatever. And, you know, we're going to try – we'll help him with parts or whatever we can. But you know, I mean, here's a guy that's doing it but for that reason. It's either buy a ride in a car or buy your own. And when you buy your own, man, you got to sacrifice it all. He's got a beautiful pro mod, and he's – getting rid of his pro mod. See, I don't want to get rid of my pro mod to top fuel race. I won't do it. But, you know, I understand that attraction because it's like a drug. I mean, it's once you get that in your veins, you have to have it. And Scott will do good at it because he's realistic about it. He wants to go out there and try to run 390s. And he wants to, another red line. Yep. Plus
another red line. Another invoice.
Another invoice.
Ching, 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 ching. And Sonic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness, man. Well, hey, we've covered a lot of ground here. I guess let's kind of wrap up today's episode. I want to give a shout out to all of our sponsors, Stroud Safety, Redline. Old Mark Beatty's gotten his money's worth this week. Yes. Flow Racing, of course, our longtime partners here at Drag Illustrated. Log on to flowracing.com. Get yourself a subscription. Huge news from those guys switching over and allowing a monthly membership. I think that's a big deal. I think they're going to see like some pay-per-view level action when there's some big races. I think they're going to see a lot of people subscribe for those monthly deals. So I'm excited about that. But let's talk about the future real quick, Scott. What do you got coming up? I know you're headed out to the racetrack to test both the Nitro cars. What's a successful test going to look like for you guys? I mean, what are you looking to accomplish?
We want both of these cars right now. The goal, we have a big match race set up at Mocan Dragway on July 15th that weekend at the Nitro Chaos race. We're going to do some exhibition stuff, and we're going to run the top fuel car exhibition also. We're going to run both pro mods and the dragster. We're not going to run competition, I don't think, because you know I love it because there's fuel alters and stuff running for that series, and I like the way they're doing it. But we're going to be there for some exhibition stuff with the pro mods. The goal is to make these cars go to the eighth mile. Even if it's slow, and I'll get bashed on the internet if they go slow. Oh, my pro mod runs faster than that. That's fine. I can live with that. We're going to make them go to the finish line, put on a good show, and that's the goal. I've got 4 barrels of nitro, and I plan to burn every drop of it before we get there. That's my goal, is to burn every drop of nitro before we get to Mocan. And then we load up, and 2 days later, I have to be in Indy at Dom Lagana's shop. We're going to put he's redoing the second dragster that I drive. He's redoing the whole thing, rewiring it. Just, we call it an exorcism. I'm a little sloppy at times and let my maintenance program go. So Dom Lagana's performing an exorcism on my other car. It's a bare chassis. We're going to bolt it together at Dom's shop and haul ass to Virginia. Dom's going, Stewie's going. So we're going to Virginia for the Night of Fire, the PDRA race. And we're going to run both cars there. Jacob will drive one. I'll drive the other. Larry Dixon, Artie Allen. And I'm pretty sure if anybody's there, they'll see Ricky Smith hit the gas in a top fuel car, because that's another boy.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you got him? You got him roped in?
He's been in the car. He fits. We fit him in there. I've got proof that he's been in there. It's going to be impressive. Now, he's pretty... we've talked about it, but we all know how serious he is at a race, and he's going to be at a PDRA race. So whether or not he commits to do that during a race, I don't know, but I'm just telling you, in my mind, it's going to happen.
You just have him do all the negotiating for all your match races, and you know, he'll have everybody whipped into shape.
But you know, a guy, he says this is last year, and I almost believe it this year, but he obviously has a lot to give to the sport by tuning people and making – he's going to be out there in the sport. But would that not be an awesome story for drag racing to see him in a top fuel car? Just – he said, you know, even if I go 200 or 300 feet, can you – to me, that gives me goosebumps, you know.
Same. I mean, I think that
I love him. Love him or hate him, but I love him. I like it because he is no bullshit. There's no gray area with him. He's black and white, and I love that.
No, he's man. I agree. I think Ricky is a goat. He's one of the greatest of all time, no doubt about it. And it would be cool to see him stomp on that loud pedal in a Top Fuel car.
And those pictures of the Pro Mod at the World Series of Pro Mod with the wheels in the air at 500 feet. The reason it did that is because of him. He helped me all winter on that car over the phone. And all I wanted to do was wheelie. I wanted to power wheelie like a turbo car. And look, I got it. They all wanted to fix it. And I told them, anybody touches that suspension, I'll break your arms. I'm going to wheelie the whole weekend. That's all I want to do is wheelie.
That is awesome, man. Thank God for Scott Palmer. Yeah. I remember when you were telling me about running your Top Fuel car, like, and you're like, no, I want the front end up. Everybody's isn't that the whole idea? We've lost that a little bit, unfortunately, man.
We've lost all of that, you know, and it does. Okay. It might affect the ET a little bit, man. At some point we're going to have to give up some of that's where the scoreboard hurts. Turn the scoreboard off.
And it wouldn't matter.
A few of those. I mean, you know, for the 300-mile-an-hour deal, yeah, we need a scoreboard, but the rest of the time that scoreboard might hurt us. At least 70% of the time it hurts us because we're just looking at numbers.
Well, I think about it every time, like the first few cars run at an NHRA national event and it's like everybody's kind of ho-hum because they don't get down or whatever. It's like, hey, man, there's a whole lot of people here who have never seen this shit before. Right. They don't know if that was a bad run. I mean, it looked pretty terrifying from here. You know what I mean? But we're all like, oh, 420, 304. What a bummer. You know, that's not going to get you in. But I mean, to the untrained eye or to the casual fan, this thing just, you know what I mean? Went two city blocks and three at 300 miles an hour. But
and not to mention that 420 is probably a 470 in the quarter mile, which is insane.
Insane. You
know? Yeah. Insane. The 370s we're running right now, those are 440s in the quarter mile. 440. I mean, I remember our first, we ran a 458 or something quarter mile. And the party in our pits was so insane. I don't even know if we made it to the next day to the racetrack because that was the barrier. You know, we ran 458. Are you shitting me? At Norwalk? At Norwalk's where we did it. And it was insane. And now, if you run a 450, what would be equivalent to a 388 or something? Everybody just, whatever. That's okay. But they forget how fast that actually is.
Yeah. We get jaded.
Very jaded. Very, very jaded. It's hard, man. Well, hey, Scott, dude, I appreciate you spending basically your whole afternoon with us here. It's glad we were able to pry you away from the shop. I guess we didn't get you're in the shop in the trailer, so nothing's too terribly different.
Yeah, I'm here. So we just want to make sure we'll all get together and get our underground small tire gangster race put together for the Stampede of Speed. You know, I just need everybody's input on it. I mean,
by all accounts, it sounds like we're going to throw a Mega Bash, a Drag Illustrated Mega Bash Friday night. So we're going to throw an Epic Rager. So that'll be exciting. Looks like we're going to do Scott Palmer's Nitro Sideshow, a big money low prep race, small tire low prep, and the second annual Cheap Street Invitational Friday night at the week leading up to the Stampede of Speed is going to be – I think we're going to get that party started off right.
Hey, Wes, really you going to drive?
I'd like to drive something.
And if we get once we put this together, I'm saying right now, Friday night, minimum, I'll guarantee a minimum of $10,000 to win for the small tire class. No entry fee, without buying in. If everybody wants to buy in, they can make the purse bigger. And I'm not saying that won't grow. That purse may grow. But I'm just saying right now, I would guarantee $10,000 to the winner of an invitational deal. I want you guys to help me out with the deal and Jimmy Dale, he's working on it too. But I mean, all of us get together and come up with an amount of invitations and how we do it off of following. I want guys there that have a big social media following.
We got to get some new people to the drag races. Yeah, like we've got to get a different group of people to show up to an NHRA national.
This is how
event.
You do it. Like what Jason said earlier. How do you get that next crop of fans and racers? That's how you do it.
I think we have to get that group there. And I know they're underground. I mean, I call them underground racers. I love it because they're badasses that the John Forces don't even know their name. But I sit around the computer and follow them. because I'm a junkie. I'm the worst junkie.
Alicia walked. My wife walked by me Saturday night, and I was watching like a War in the Woods video on YouTube, and she goes, "Do you not ever get tired of that stuff?" And I said, "No, never do." I mean, I was literally watching.
She knew the answer to that.
Yeah,
that
she knew the answer. You know, she said the funniest shit last night. She was mad at me about something. I can't remember what it was, and she goes, "My wife has a penchant for butchering like sayings." Like terrible. And this was one of all time great. She goes, "Wes, if the tables were returned," and I said, "Wait, what?" And she goes, "What?
You'd be
if
setting the tables on the floor.
Were returned," I said, "Returned? Like to Costco? Or like where are we returning the tables to?" She says, "You knew what I meant, but that was one of my all time. If the tables were returned, Wes.
The tables were returned, you wouldn't have any place to eat."
It was so funny. If the tables were returned, oh my gosh, that's the greatest thing ever. But no, I never get tired of the shit either, and I know all of the people here that support us week in and week out don't either. Tons of cool stuff going on. Stay tuned for more information on Drag Illustrated, Scott Palmer kind of collabing at the Texas Stampede of Speed, which I think has become one of the coolest events that happened in all of drag racing. Week of drag racing. It's a ball.
Like anybody who wants to like get on my Facebook or whatever, I'm trying to put together a YouTube channel. I'm so terrible at all that, but I'm trying to do that. We want to get, you know, my next goal too. We've had Travis Pastrana in a car. I want to get Cletus in a Top Fuel car. I mean, I haven't talked to him about that. I'm just saying he's a real gearhead. I mean, legit drag racing guy.
Oh, there's no doubt.
I mean, it'd be cool to see that happen. I mean, I want to do some crazy stuff, you know, and I'm trying to get a YouTube channel. I'm not good at it. Jimmy Dale told me you got to get a YouTube channel because nobody can share anything with you. But I don't even know what that means. So I'm trying to get help from that. But whatever. I just kind
of
wing it.
That's part of what makes you you.
How have I even survived? I barely get on Facebook. I can barely even manage a Facebook account.
You know? I think you do pretty well, man. And it's you're a lot more relatable. Like you're just like everybody. You're like us. Don't have like a team of people that are like handling this or handling that. You're doing it yourself, driving down the road. You got one hand on the wheel of a big rig and the other hand, you know, making a status update, you know,
on the rumble strips.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for the time, dude. And I want to thank everybody for joining in each and every Wednesday. We surely appreciate you. Remember, support the people that support us. Click like, click share, click subscribe. Help us spread the gospel of drag racing, the great American motorsport. We'll see you next Wednesday. Same bat time, same bat channel, 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, in case you didn't know. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Later, y'all. Thank
you. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, you bet. See y'all later.